This is Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, provides greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions, plural, .org. This week, our sponsor is Podcast Potpourri. This is a quality program of unique, original, and sometimes beyond the norm topics. It can be heard at podcastfromtheheart.com, one of the podcasting channels on Yaktivate, where this podcast also originates. Podcast Potpourri is updated weekly and includes an interesting array of guest speakers, from psychics to teachers to authors to healers, as well as ordinary people making a big difference in the world. You can listen at podcastfromtheheart.com anytime, any day, online, or download it to your podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, and now, enjoy Emotional Connection. Hello, we are here today with Karen. Karen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
When we begin these calls, I customarily ask people just to kind of ramble for a few moments and share what it is they want to take a look at or what aspect of life they want to bring some more attention to. And then I ask some follow-up questions and we kind of trust together that we'll land in just the right spot to be able to create some insight or some opening. So why don't you do that just as succinctly as possible, and you don't have to worry about making a whole lot of sense. Just tell me, you know, what's on your mind today.
Well, I'm in a transitional, period in my life. I've been divorced for about, 7 years, and, I'm pretty happy with my life where it is now. But recently I had a very good friend, a girlfriend who, I'd been friends with for a good 5 years, and suddenly she did like an about turn, and I haven't heard from her for almost 2 months, and I'm not comfortable with, bridging the gap. And she's a person that has had a lot of financial struggles and just seems to cling to chaos in a sense. And I feel guilty, but at the same time, I've really enjoyed the peace and quiet, if you will, because I feel I'm more focused on, things in my life. So I'm interested in, trying to be compassionate and yet dealing with people when they don't act in a way that, you think they, should be acting,
Mm-hmm. Let me just check in with you about that, what you said so far, and then by all means, if there's more, I'd like to hear it. But just for clarification purposes, in relation to this particular friend, I think I heard on the one hand that the chaos was a little too much for you, but that you're also looking for, ways to, deal directly with people when things, aren't lining up the way you would like to. So in regard to this particular friend, are you at peace with the friendship either ending or going into a long pause period, or would you actually like to reconnect?
I'm at peace, where it is. I really trust and believe things happen, for a reason. And I know throughout my life when something that seemed to be a negative happened, there was always something positive that, you know, came out of it. The proverbial silver lining of the dark cloud. But, you know, I'm okay with it. It's just I find myself sometimes getting impatient, you know, with people when they don't say what I expect them to say, or they say something different and I'm, you know, disappointed and, you know, tend to be a little impatient at times.
Okay. And, okay, so was there more that you were going to add in relation to your overall kind of opening share, or because I know I stopped you in the middle, I want to make sure you had a chance to add anything you wanted to.
I think that's, you know, the main thing. I'm really trying to, you know, have an open heart and be, you know, compassionate. And, you know, it's hard, you know, sometimes when people don't do things. You know, I have, you know, some family situations with an elderly mother who lives with my elder brother. And sometimes he comes out with something or doesn't do something that, you know, is disappointing. So, you know, I'm trying to be patient and compassionate, but and to understand that everybody isn't a clone of, you know, everybody else. So, you know, everybody acts differently.
So what I'm hearing, as you describe that is an orientation or an intention towards patience and compassion, and then a recognition that sometimes you might not do as well in that regard as you think you might be able to, and so you're looking for maybe some insight into how you could bridge that gap. Does that sound
Yes.
Right? Okay. All right. Perfect. So what I'd like to do is check in with you a little bit more about what happens in those times where your impatience kind of rears up, like more specifically how you experience that. And you might want to just share a specific example. It could be regarding your brother. It could be regarding this friend. Or if you kind of have a generalized way of describing what it looks like, that would be fine too. The best choice would be one where you could actually it's live enough in you that as you talk about it, you could bring up some of the tension or emotion connected to it.
Well, I can give you a specific example with my brother recently. My mother had to be hospitalized on Thursday, and my brother just had a hip replacement operation. And he's doing very well, but he's still limping and incapacitated to a certain extent, and there's certain movements he can't, you know, make. He's still walking with a cane. So I brought my mother to the doctor, and then they said, you know, she's got to be hospitalized, and went to the hospital, and it took forever because they didn't have a bed, and, you know, it was just like a really long thing. So I finally got home about 6 hours later and stopped by my brother on the way back to work, and was very exhausted. And he didn't, you know, offer anything to drink or anything. It was about dinner time, and I asked him, I said, you know, what are you planning to do for dinner? And he wound up making a list of, oh, I've got plenty to eat. I've got steaks. I've got hamburger, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, and in my mind, you know, I thought, well, gee, maybe he'll invite me, you know, to stay for dinner and, you know, we can discuss my mother. But that didn't cross his mind. So I said, okay, well, I got to get back to work. You know, I'll be talking to you, and left. So I think on my part it was like an unreasonable, you know, feeling on my part that, you know, that he would automatically say, gee, would you, you know, it sounds like you've had a long day, why don't you have something to drink, you know, what are you doing for dinner, do you want to stay, kind of thing. I guess what it is, I'm used to more hospitality, per se, and sometimes it isn't, you know, readily forth, you know, forthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get disappointed because I feel like I had false expectations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in that situation, when you had what you now look at as a false expectation or an unrealistic expectation, how did you respond in that moment?
Well, I was frustrated and, you know, and disappointed and, you know, couldn't help comparing him unfairly to my father, who is very hospitable. I mean, if you came in, you know, you always had something to eat or drink or whatever. You know, he was very hospitable, you know, in that regard. So, you know, it was unfair on my part of, you know, comparing him, mm-hmm. you know, to my father, because he's different. He's not my father. He's, mm-hmm. you know, he's a different, you know, personality. But it was frustrated, and I was, you know, disappointed, you know.
So inside of yourself, if I'm hearing you right, you felt frustrated and disappointed, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then how did that actually show up in terms of your response or your behavior?
Well, I sort of got abrupt and said, you know, just sort of limited our conversation by saying, well, I've got to get back to work. I'm exhausted. It's been a very long day, you know, kind of thing. Perhaps I should have just been more overt, like, you know, gee, do you have something to drink? I could use something to drink or, you know, whatever. It's been a long day, but I just didn't feel comfortable doing that. Maybe it's my issue, you know.
Mm-hmm. And did you feel in that experience that your brother could kind of feel between the lines that you were frustrated and disappointed?
I'm not sure. He processes information differently than I do. I tend to be, I'm very intuitive, and I can pick up what people are feeling or doing at a glance. I can walk into a room and pick up on who's angry, who's not feeling comfortable. I've always been able to do that. It's, I think, residual from the family I grew up in. But my brother processes differently. He's a muller. He sort of mulls mm-hmm. things over. So what I found works is to sort of suggest something or plant a seed, if you will, and then let him think about it. And then later in the day or the next day or the next time you talk, you can discuss it again. And he'll have really thought about it and, you know, will come back with a, you know, with a response. And I found that that kind of communication with him works, you know, works well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's slower for me because I'm quicker paced and I'm very observant and I'm very quick to pick up on the emotional barometer, if you will, of what's going on around me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it sounds like he, as a muller, maybe it came to him a little bit later, but did he ever circle back and talk to you about it?
No, he didn't, but something really nice happened the next day, and I would like to think it's a residual of that. I stopped by on my lunch hour the next day because there were some things that needed to be tidied up in my mother's bedroom, you know, while she was in the hospital, and so I was, you know, cleaning stuff up and told him, I came out. He was sitting in the kitchen, and I came out of the bedroom with a stack of junk mail and stuff to go through, and, you know, and he was happy that I was doing it. And he said later, you know, I was there, you know, for a half hour or so, he said, "Did you have lunch yet?" And I almost, like, fell off my chair. Uh-huh. And I said, "No, I didn't." And he said, "Well, I was going to make a hamburger on the grill. Would you want one?" So I said, "Oh, yeah, that sounds great." So he made, you know, hamburgers for us on the grill. So I'd like to think perhaps he mulled over what occurred, like, the day before. And perhaps that indirectly was, you know, was his response, you know, to it.
Got it. And how long did it take you after the initial response that you had to come to that place where you realized, oh, you know, he isn't my dad, and that expectation, you know, wasn't quite accurate in the situation, and, you know, I could see how I could have been more, you know, compassionate or patient with him?
Well, the minute he invited me, you know, for, you know, to stay for lunch and to have, you know, burgers, I really felt that it was, you know, and this is all not discussed. It's everything is like,
sure,
you know, below the surface as
absolutely
things are in families. I just felt that perhaps he realized afterwards, when I left the night before, that, gee, I should have offered her something to eat or, you know, or drink, and I didn't.
Right.
And, you know, that was his way, in a sense, of, you know, sort of making up for, you know, what he didn't, you know, do the night before.
Right, right. So, you know, it's interesting in listening and just feeling into the situation, Karina, that it sounds like that the only part of that entire situation that happened in a way that, you know, wasn't maybe what you would consider to be 100% of what you might hope for is that in that first encounter, your initial response was some frustration and then some disappointment. And everything
yeah
else kind of worked out. Is that
yeah
accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a funny question to ask you, which is, what's so bad about feeling frustration and disappointment?
Well, I felt that, in a sense, I was setting myself up to fail by having false expectations and unjustly, comparing him, you know, to my father, because I know he's not, you know, my father. My father, by the way, had died like 6 years ago, so
mm-hmm
he's no longer, you know, around.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt frustrated and bad that I had made the, you know, the comparison, but I also tried to have compassion for myself by, you know, I have these little inner dialogues, by saying, well, it's also normal, you know, to compare him,
mm-hmm,
you know, to dad, so.
Yeah. So it sounds like maybe the frustration and the disappointment was less the issue for you as it was your recognition that the situation was kind of a self-created setup due to your expectation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm thinking right now as you share that of a bumper sticker I saw recently that said, expectation is premeditated resentment.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. But what's interesting about that is that once you recognize that to have a particular expectation without a kind of a flexibility to realize in the moment that that expectation may or may not be met, or another way to say that is to have whatever expectations we have to hold them kind of loosely.
Mm-hmm.
Once you make an intention to do that, it's pretty much in your power. So I'm wondering, do you notice that you have any, after realizing this, because I can really sense your heartfulness in this approach, you know, your willingness to just be as compassionate as possible. I mean, that's more than half the battle, so to speak, because you're already coming from a very kind of awakened place. So are there any expectations that you notice? And these could be connected to your brother, could be connected to your friend, or could be connected to anything. Would you say if you did a kind of a quick 360 scan of your life and your consciousness, where you notice there might be some expectation that is more difficult to hold in that loose and flexible way?
Well, I have high expectations of myself more than anything else. And one of my greatest, you know, challenges is to have self-compassion, I think, more than anything else. And I know this friend of mine who I'm no longer in touch with, one of the things that she did do when we were together, which was good, is anytime I said something very critical of myself, she would point that out to me, and say, stop being so critical, or, you know, you didn't do that badly, or, you know, whatever it was, you know, that I said. So that was good, and I didn't even realize I was doing it until she started pointing it out. And part of that may be messages carried over from, you know, childhood, you know, parents being, you know, critical, kind of thing. And I didn't even realize, you know, I was doing it. So I really tried, you know, I really try when I find myself getting, you know, stressed that, you know, I did something that I could have done better and I didn't do it as well as I wanted to or whatever, just, you know, talking to myself and saying, look, you know, time isn't an issue. You did very well. And try to count the blessings of the situation instead of looking at the glass being half empty.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the self-compassion has been the biggest struggle, because I find I'm, you know, compassionate with, you know, other people, but not with myself sometimes,
mm-hmm.
which
yeah.
amazes me, you know.
Yes, it's, you know, very often we are the last beneficiary of our own personal and spiritual growth. You know, we others
yeah.
around us get it, you know, before we're willing, you know,
yeah.
able to give it to ourselves. So I think that this piece, this having high expectations of yourself, which results in a pretty strong inner critic, is really the heart of the matter, as I hear you share. And I'm wondering what you already know from the journey that's brought you to this moment about where that kind of excessively critical part of you developed and came to be.
Well, it developed in, you know, childhood. I was always very focused and very project-oriented, you know, and goal-oriented, you know, set a goal, achieve it, set a new one, onward, upward, kind of thing. And I'm still that way to a great extent, other than my priorities have certainly, you know, realigned themselves. And I think I am kinder to myself and more compassionate and not as driven as I used to be, where you would lose sense of the journey. You would just so focus on the destination that you know, you would be unaware of what was going on getting there. And, you know, the journey really is the whole crux of it. It's
sure.
not where you get, but it's, you know, what you learn along the way and who you meet.
Sure.
And it's taken me, you know, years to, like, appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that capacity in a child, there's sort of two parts to that I'm seeing. One of them is just the ability to be very driven and focused can be a personality trait. It doesn't have to arise out of any particular challenge. But the other part of it, which is to then be really hard on oneself when not achieving perfection, usually means that there was an inner emotional need to achieve as close to perfection as possible in order to receive some kind of reward, whether it's approval or love or attention. So I'm wondering if you notice anything when you look back on those childhood days that might have been the engine behind that excess critical nature that developed.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely my mother's voice. There's no, you know, question about that. And part of it was certainly looking for love, attention, approval. And she was a parent who was physically there, but emotionally and spiritually not available. And it, you know, it left its mark on all of us growing up. The good thing, however, when I was a child was I got involved with dogs. And I got involved showing and eventually, you know, breeding, training, you know, as strictly as a hobby. But my encounters and my relationship with the dogs were really, really helpful for me to have the encouragement and the unconditional love that I was not getting in, you know, other areas of my life.
Mm-hmm. So you found, you know, kind of just through your instinct and also we could say grace, you found a way to get some of that care and attention that you didn't get from your mom. And yet at the same time, her voice kind of lodged itself within you and it was her from whom you first really got those messages that nothing could be good enough. And
yes, yes.
You always have to try harder. And
right, right. Well, one of the problems in growing up is I had an older sister who died before I was born. And she was 6 years old. She was killed in a playground accident. And my mother always told stories about her growing up. She was a palpable presence at our dinner table, as if she, you know, was there in person, through the stories and how my mother kept her alive, so to speak. And she was always described as being, you know, perfection personified. So it's hard to measure up to a ghost, especially one who's perfect. And that was a message that I got, certainly loud and clear growing up. Not my brother so much because, you know, there was the gender difference there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. And how old were you when you
I wasn't born yet. My oldest brother was 13 months old when she died, and my second oldest brother had not been born yet.
And so,
he was born about 4 years after that, and then I was born 4 years after that. So 8 years after she died, I was born.
I see. So I really hear in that story just a great challenge for you as a girl, and I'm wondering, and we're going to sort of shift gears to an experiential exploration just in this moment briefly. When you say that to yourself, and you say it out loud, you know, to me, it's hard to measure up to a ghost, especially when she's perfect. What do you notice you feel in your body, if anything?
Well, it, you know, I mean, perfect in my, you know, in my mother's eyes. It just...
I understand. I
feel small, you know.
Okay.
I feel little.
Okay. So that's perfect. And when you say, I feel little, which I get, I'm interested to know if when you turn your attention to your body and you just kind of let yourself scan without looking for anything in particular or really like pushing for an answer, where would you say that sensation of smallness is centered?
I think in posture, oddly enough,
mm-hmm.
in not standing up straight, in like stooping
mm-hmm.
to almost, you know, not crouch down so much, but not take up as much space as when you sit with your shoulders back or stand, you know, tall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And so in this moment, as you were hearing me talk about that, did you notice that you had a kind of a postural shift into something that was a little...
Yeah, absolutely. I threw my shoulders back.
Uh-huh. So you threw them back in response to that smallness?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So this is really a key thing, so I'm going to ask a little bit more about that. Did you mean that you noticed that you kind of shrunk a little bit in your posture And then as a way not to kind of give in to that, you threw your shoulders back to kind of get back up straight and strong?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Okay. So what you just described so eloquently is the, let's say, the physio-emotional legacy of what you were sharing a few moments ago. And it really does tie in directly to what you were asking about earlier around criticism and self-criticism and how perhaps to find a way to be more gentle on yourself, which then, of course, would bring us back to the beginning of the conversation and even make it easier for you to be more gentle with your expectations and your criticisms of others, even though they probably are more on the receiving end of that than you, as you described.
Yeah.
But the key is, so you developed some, you developed two ways to, you know, deal with the situation as it came to you. One of them was to learn to be as perfect as you could, to stand up tall in your achievement, to try, you know, to achieve the inevitable, which is to, you know, equal your sister in that way. And then also, just in terms of the emotional challenge of it, or the need that went unmet is a better way to describe it, you found, fortunately, you found the world of dogs and breeding and training to give that to you. And all of that, you know, is just something to be really, you know, congratulated for. I mean, a lot of it happened as a kid, and it was your instinctive response, and yet it really got you through to a place that was much more healthy for you and allowed you to function and make your way in the world. And the big but that comes after that is that there's no way that inside of all of that there wasn't the small one, the one who really did feel the brunt of that inability to measure up and the kind of hamster wheel of no matter how hard you could try, no matter what you could do, there wasn't any way that you could achieve anything to be able to get the love and attention that you needed.
Yeah,
And whether or not your mother was like that before your sister died, there's really no way to tell, but what she presented you with as a mother, as you described, was somebody who was there for the details and the you know, practical aspects of parenting, but really wasn't present for you in terms of the emotional connection.
Right. My sister calls it custodial care.
Mm-hmm.
I have a younger sister, and, you know, we've discussed it, you know, a lot, too, and basically it was custodial care, you know, that we got because, you know, my mother just wasn't able, you know, to provide anything else.
Right. Right. And so that recognition that your mother wasn't able to provide more than custodial care is, again, a really important, mature recognition. But it's not something that, you know, you could have understood back then, and it's part of the legacy is the wounding of that, you know, in you as a child. And those kind of wounds really remain, and they remain kind of locked away to some degree until we access them. So what I'm wondering is, when you aren't in a situation where you throw your shoulders back, so to speak, when life creates some situation in which, like it or not, you know, you have to feel those bad feelings, you have to feel vulnerable and unworthy to some degree, when, if any, at any time do you notice that that kind of thing happens?
Well, I when that happens, I tend to emotionally, you know, distance myself. I can just see, I can feel myself just shutting off, you know. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you flip a switch, you know.
Right.
It's like, you know, just you're there physically, but you're not, you know, if you if you get it. You're just not really fully present.
As a matter of fact, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be too much to say that in those moments you're practicing custodial care of yourself.
A good point. Yeah.
So
definitely.
So my question for you is, would you be willing to try your best to approach that kind of moment and that part of yourself differently?
In what way?
Well, that part of you that only received custodial care from your mother was clamoring desperately for what all children are needing, and that is compassionate, loving connection and attention.
Yeah.
And that part of you to this day is still needing that.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
That's not a diminishment of you or anything negative about you. We all want that. In your case in particular, there's a special need for it because it's as if a vulnerable, and I would go so far as to say precious part of you, has been in exile to some degree because for your protection you had to wall it off way back when.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And she still hasn't really been welcomed back.
Yeah.
So the way that you can welcome her back is actually so much more simple than maybe you might immediately think of. And that is when you feel that way, to actually turn your attention to that feeling and welcome it in a tender and spacious and accepting way, just as a really emotionally present parent would welcome a child
mm-hmm.
in that state.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's one more element to that, which is that when you are in that state, usually you're not going to notice it first off because you feel so small and vulnerable and needing. You're going to notice it probably in your habitual way of shutting down, or as you said, you know, shutting off.
Yeah.
So the first question is, when you shut off, do you notice any signature features of that? You know, do you start thinking a certain way? Does your body, shift into a different set of sensations? Do you feel numb? You know, do you have a compulsive activity that you go to? What would be, you know, like the most reliable indication that you've had one of those shutoffs?
Usually it's, leaving wherever I am, you know, just mm-hmm. physically. A feeling of, okay, you know, like my brother, you know, when he wasn't forthcoming with, you know, gee, would you like something to drink or eat or whatever, it's like I turn very abrupt and it's like, okay, I've got to get out of here and I've got to get out of here now, you know,
okay.
kind of thing. It's like
got
leaving
it.
The scene of the crime, you know,
right.
quickly, you
right.
know, kind of thing. It's like you needing to just be in physically in a different place.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, if we talk about the fight or flight reflex, yours is the flight reflex.
Yeah.
Most
yeah.
ordinarily, when you feel threatened by a situation, you're going to take off.
Yeah.
So it's really great that you brought that up in relation to your brother, because this is how everything ties together.
Yeah.
In that moment with your brother, on the one hand, we could talk about it around the subject of expectation, and it is true that a wise spiritual person monitors his or her expectations and tries to be fluid with them in order to be as present as possible. However, in that situation, as you described it, the deeper truth is that you were hurt by his response
mm-hmm.
or his lack of an invitation.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, because that was kind of too difficult to own up to and connect to in the heat of the moment, given everything you've shared with me about, you know, the patterns that got set a long time ago. You went to the flight reflex and, you know, removed yourself from the hurtful environment, and then you also removed yourself in another way, which was to, you know, in some time, come to an understanding that would help you be more accepting of your brother. And then, of course, he was more, he came forward more to you, and that cycle completed itself, and actually in a positive way, as you described.
Yeah, yeah.
However, the question that you first presented, which was around impatience, and then that kind of shifted into expectation, but it was all the same thing. You know, we talked about your friend, we talked about your brother, really comes back around to this issue of hurt, that when people don't meet your expectations or do things the way that you really want them to, do them perfectly in relation to you, that there's a flash of that hurt, and before you know it, you're out of there.
Yeah.
So if you want a kind of systemic shift, if you want to actually make the deepest kind of change inside of yourself that would limit the harmful impacts of, you know, impatience and of expectation, it would be to come into a closer relationship with this vulnerability that I've been talking about. And that also would feel the best for you. It would be like a kind of, you know, a warm bath to your entire, you know, body, mind, and spirit,
mm-hmm.
to create that kind of self-connection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that,
well, one of the things I do during this, you know, stressful time, you know, with the hospital and my mother and all of this, I've really focused on self-care and doing some things for myself that, you know, that I don't necessarily ordinarily do. And that really helped. It was almost like I was parenting, you know, myself,
mm-hmm.
You know, because of the undue stress and
yeah.
everything going on.
And
it really helped.
What does that self-care look like for you?
Well, one of the things I did Friday was I went to the movies, which, you know, I don't go all the time. And I went right from work and, you know, did a couple of errands and then went to the movies, so I didn't get home until later. And it felt really nice to have, you know, like a total break.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I did in the morning is I went out to have breakfast at this little place in town and wrote in my journal, because, you know, I do a lot of journal writing. I do a lot of writing, and it really helps me process stuff and make sense of things that in the moment, you know, you don't really know what happened or you can't make
sure.
sense of it, but then you journal about it and suddenly, you know, you find yourself coming up with an insight that you didn't have in the,
mm-hmm.
you know, moment of whatever happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it felt good to, you know, take care of myself in that, you know, respect.
Right, right. So, you know, I'm just really inspired by the ways that you have really found to grow and heal and live in accord with, you know, what is, you know, your deepest heart's desire for you and for others. And I think that what I'd like to do is just add to your kit, so to speak, this other piece that in some instances might be very powerful for you. It's, in other words, it's not something that is supposed to replace any of those positive things that you do, such as the self-care, but it's something that also might add a real additional benefit. And in order to do that, what we want to do is we want to see if it's possible for you to access that small feeling in you. And one way we can do it, if it's all right with you, is I will just talk for a few moments restating what you said to me about your mom.
Uh-huh.
All the while asking you if you're willing to just tune into your body with your mind's attention and just notice what you're feeling and where you're feeling it without even having to put a name to the feelings, let alone understand them or anything at all. Just unnoticing is the only thing that's required.
Mm-hmm.
So would you be willing to try that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. So just tune in now as I describe for you what you told me, which is that your mother, who really is the person you needed the most as a young child to give you loving care and encouragement, wasn't really able to do that. She didn't have the skill or the ability or both. And it left you with a kind of barren connection where you needed life and you needed love. And what's more troubling than that is that she kept herself apart from you with this ghostly connection to your older sister who had died. And so it wasn't only that she wasn't there for you emotionally the way she needed to be, it was also that she talked about your sister and beheld her in such a way that it was clear to you that that sister got the loving care and attention somehow that you so desperately needed and were denied. So you didn't just not get it. It was kind of thrown in your face on a daily basis that somehow you must not be deserving because otherwise you would have got what your sister got. So as you hear me say that and as you tune in, what do you notice in your body?
I think a real heaviness around my heart.
Okay, so that's really good noticing. And what I want to ask you to do is just keep your attention there on that heaviness. Don't try to make it go away or don't try to understand it even. Just let your attention be right there, almost in a cradling kind of way. So as you keep feeling into this girl who got nothing, she didn't do anything to deserve this absence of loving care. It was just taken from her. And in that heaviness, just let your attention be almost as if you're just saying, it's all right, it's okay. Just for these next few moments, be with the physical legacy around your heart of that deprivation that was so challenging when you were young. And just hold it with your attention, almost as if you're getting really microscopic in your awareness, and you're following those sensations of heaviness as perhaps they deepen or they move or they shift, and you're just only staying right there in this loving way, attending to them in a way that your mother could never attend to you. So just for another few moments, I'm going to be quiet so you're not distracted at all. Just let yourself stay connected and go wherever those sensations take you while continuing to notice. Good. So what did you notice now as you were just staying with that sensation?
I noticed, like a deep sigh and then a feeling of it being, you know, the heaviness being, you know, dissipated. And I also realized from what you just said in reiterating about my mother is one of the key problems I've struggled with during my life, especially when I was younger, was a feeling of not really belonging, of not really, you know, fitting in, of being on the outside looking in. Mm-hmm. And I realized why, because, that fundamental bond between mother and child was, not existent or damaged at a very young age.
Right. I think that's very astute, that if that the first inside connection, the first inside relationship is between your mother and you, and if you don't have that, there's a way in which you're imprinted as outside, looking in, and looking in, but wishing you could be inside that connection that isn't there. So, but I want to go back to what you said at first, which is that as you connected to that sensation, first you felt a sigh, and then you felt that heaviness begin to dissipate. So
it was almost like fog lifting, you know, in a sense. And when it was silent, and when I was trying to just concentrate on, you know, the feeling, I had this image of like an older part of myself cradling almost like an infant and patting her and saying, there, it's okay, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that just arose, and it's beautiful because that really is what you were doing. And, and when people talk about loving yourself and how important it is to love yourself and how you can't really love another person until you love yourself, it's usually at the unhelpful level of a cliche because, you know, what does it really mean to love yourself? But from my perspective, the best definition of really powerful self-love is being able to cradle with your attention, as you just did, the parts of ourselves that we like the least or know the least or want the least or that hurt the most.
Right, right.
So in that moment, you experienced almost an instant healing, and that's what happens when we bring our compassionate attention to those vulnerable parts in ourselves. And when I say instant healing, I don't mean like a quick fix, you know, okay, that's all done. What I mean is that every time from now on that you find yourself going into the flight reflex is another healing opportunity. It's strange to say, it's paradoxical, but you could look forward to those times when your brother or your friend or anybody else does or says something that, you know, causes your expectations to go, you know, unmet, you to become frustrated and disappointed, because there, right then and there, as soon as you have a safe moment away from other people, you can turn your attention to your body, do exactly what you just did, connect with the part of you that has been wounded in that moment in a small way, but which taps into the much bigger wounding that you experienced many years ago. Mm-hmm. And in those moments, you'll have the same kind of healing opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you do this, the lighter you become,
mm-hmm.
because there's not a bottomless pit of that kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is you're not responding to the slights of the present moment or the unmet expectations with the weight of your past. You're responding just in the present, and it becomes all the more easy to be loose and flexible about it and to not really have the same, you know, intensity of response at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's available to you by adding this piece that we call emotional connection to the ways that you care for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense.
And it's the opposite of custodial care.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what you missed.
Right.
Because a child does not need any particular words of wisdom from a parent. It doesn't need perfect parenting. A child just needs to feel that loving gaze is present, that they are held and esteemed and loved by their caregiver.
Yeah.
And when they feel that, something settles and soothes and grows inside, and they feel like they are on the inside and that they are worthy, and they get that peace back then. But to be honest, many of us, if most of us, didn't get it. And it's this piece, it's this practice of cradling attention that you did so beautifully in just a few moments, which allows us to really become whole in the present moment. Because as I always share with people, you don't need to go looking for anything in the past, because anything that you need to heal from the past is here in the present anyway.
Right.
And
right.
It's there in the way you respond to your brother or to anybody else when you get frustrated and disappointed and impatient. And the idea isn't that you, adult Karen, shouldn't get frustrated and disappointed and impatient. It's that in each of those moments you have a choice to take your attention off of the one who somehow didn't measure up and onto yourself and the part inside of you who grew up feeling like you could never measure up.
Right.
You love her with your attention, with that simple loving attention, and your heart just opens and opens all the more.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so the only thing I would add to that picture for you, Karen, is that we talked about how the flight reflex is your best indicator that there's a healing opportunity. But there's one more indicator, which I think probably happens for you a lot more frequently, and that's just a self-critical thought.
Yeah.
Because you can make a commitment right now that every time you catch yourself having a critical thought, that rather than trying to talk yourself out of it, which is it's a fine practice, it can come later. It can come, 10 seconds later. But before you get to that place where you start trying to talk yourself out of that critical thought, if you let the thought be a chime that calls your attention to the fact that that never good enough part of you is right there, present, and, dying to be connected to. You can do it right then and there, too. So it goes like this. You have a negative thought like, oh, my God, why couldn't you finish that on time? Or why do you have to be so judgmental of people? And any time you have a negative thought, which you can tell pretty quickly because it's one that makes you feel bad. Like you don't like it. You kind of get a little small in your posture, even if it's just almost incremental. You can feel it. It's kind of like, you tighten just a little bit.
Right.
Any time you have one of those thoughts, turn your attention to your body. Notice what you feel, and very quickly you'll be right in touch with that part of you which doesn't know good enough. It only knows nothing is good enough.
Right.
And if you can cradle her, let yourself get to that place of the sigh and the fog lifting, you may not even have to talk yourself out of the thought anymore. But if you want to, then you still can, and it'll be much easier, and the result will come much faster because you're already in that more expanded state of awareness. So as you hear me talking about this, is there any part of you that has like a yeah, but, or a question or anything you want to ask to help you? You'll get the most out of it when you start to practice a little bit.
Well, I think it's very helpful recognizing the two indicators, the flight response and the self critical thoughts, and then staying in the the feeling, which of course is always the challenge. But practice makes perfect. So
or practice makes not perfect, because that's a setup for you.
Yeah.
Good enough, right? But also, Karen, I know you said it's always a challenge to stay in the feeling, and it is because there's a reflex to get out of it.
Yeah.
However, I want to bring your attention to how quickly and successfully you were able to do it when I asked you to do it. I mean, it was almost instantaneous. Not everybody has that experience. The fog doesn't lift for many people as fully as it did. And I'm not trying to pretend that in that moment, the angels sang and all was well. But that
No, but it was a step, you know.
Right, but that experience is available to you in
yeah.
just about every moment that you have the opportunity.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's not so much that you need to practice doing it. You just need to practice noticing that the moment is right. And then
yeah.
you'll do it just as you did, and you'll just keep getting a bigger and bigger and fuller result.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good. So anything else you want to ask, or do you feel complete in our exploration?
Excuse me. It was very helpful because I didn't connect that issue of, you know, not belonging, which, of course, is, you know, not measuring up, you know, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I also wonder, you know, in your description of, you know, sort of playing back, you know, my description of my mother, mm-hmm. I also wonder if that wasn't one of the reasons I was so driven, you know, as a child, because I wasn't able to get, you know, her approval, her attention, so to speak, that I focused on stuff that I could get some sort of, you know, reward or, you know, tangible recognition for. And I had not connected, you know, that dot before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think it's very possible. It sounds right to me. And there is some satisfaction in connecting those dots. But the interesting thing about that is that somebody, I think it was Werner Erhard, but it could have been somebody else because I've never traced the source of this quote. But somebody said something once that was really fascinating, and that was, understanding is the booby prize, meaning that it's good mind candy when we connect those dots, and I love doing it too. And at the same time, it doesn't create the healing that we so long for.
Yeah.
And this other piece that you actually have demonstrated today that you're very skillful at does create the healing.
Yeah.
And so to be able to have something to actually do, to put your mind and your body together in
yeah.
this attentive cycle, is really what I think makes the difference for most of us. And,
yeah, yeah.
And really undoes, you know, those patterns that have been, you know, etched deeply over such a long time.
Right, right.
Yeah. So good. Well, I'm really, you know, honored to have spent this time with you and, like I said before, inspired not just by what you've brought to your life, but even just the facility that you brought to our call, your willingness to just dive in and take a look. And I want to invite you to, you know, stay in touch with me by email if you have any questions, follow-ups, or it doesn't have to be soon. It could be a year from now. You know, you run into a snag and you, you know, say, hey, well, it's not working here, or something's come up that is a little bit especially challenging for me. I'd always look forward to hearing from you and connecting with you about that.
Well, I really appreciate the very keen insight that you brought to this, and also for me, being in the feeling is never comfortable, and what you provided for me is tools to make it more, you know, comfortable with the visualization, you know, that I did. It was, you know, it helped a lot.
Wonderful, wonderful, good. All right, well, thank you again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private sessions by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Our second sponsor for this program is DIY Father, the choice for a new generation of fathers. Are you a brand new dad, like me? Or perhaps you're more experienced, or just found out that you're going to be a dad? If any of these descriptions fit, then please tune in to the International Dad Channel and the show DIY Father. Each week, International Dad and DIY Father present information, experiences, and news for fathers by fathers. For more information and to join in the discussion, visit internationaldad.com and DIYfather.com. That's our show for this week. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional connection.